On a Sunday of a baptism, it's very difficult when names are in the readings to not talk about names. Names are such an important part of our society. We try to discourage children from calling each other names. It's not a nice thing to do. It hurts people. We play the part of Atticus Finch, teaching children that different colours, different genders, different ways of being are all wonderful. They make a society vibrant and lively and living. But actually, most of us know that names can be cruel as well. Most of us will have grown up with the phrase, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never harm me." But I bet you know the truth is that it really does hurt. Because it does. So we tell our children lies. It's not just the names we give children that are important. It's the names in which we brand occupations. When we think of doctors, and I'll get shot later. We think of learned and kindly, gentle people. That was nice. We think of lawyers, and we think of shrewdness. We think of accountants, and some people think of boring. Ministers, lofty and distant. And actually, it's the name that pulls somebody closer. You might say, "Oh, that's the minister." But if you say, "Oh, that's Mary Ann," you suddenly become a human being. The comedian Miranda Hart, for all her bravado and her outrageous behaviour, has often found it hard to deal with the unkind comments that are made about her appearance, and that often happens in journalism. And in tabloid newspapers in particular, they're very good at naming and branding people so that a trait or a flaw is what others see and feel superior about. The Leveson Press Inquiry had the public discover just the huge depths that the journalists were prepared to stoop as they might try to diminish and undermine and tarnish public figures. And that kind of behaviour has sullied journalism, because there's good journalism. Journalism that allows us to encounter the world in all its myriad forms. Journalism that allows us to engage with subjects that we might not have been able to engage with. Journalism that brings the truth to the fore that we need to hear. So why names? Well, names are there in the readings today. There's the names of the Old Testament. And anybody who reads the Old Testament knows that names are important. You're always given a name for a reason. And if we know that from the Old Testament, then it's probably true in the New Testament as well. And there are names there. So, thinking about your own name, I want you to keep in the background, to remember why it's precious and important to you, to remember why your parents or someone else felt it was important you had that name. But I want you to think about some of the names that you've heard this morning. In the Old Testament, you heard about a change in name. You heard about the change of Abraham's name. He was originally called Abram, and his name changes to Abraham. And there is a purpose for that. Abram means exalted father. And so even in that first name, you're to see that he is already seen as a leader of people. He's already someone who was standing up as prepared to demonstrate his faith to the world. But he changes his name to Abraham, or God changes his name to Abraham. It sounds like he's just added a vowel and a consonant. Often that's all it is. But it's a vowel and a consonant that are hugely significant, because the new name means the father of many. And in that new name, God sets in place the promise that he'd made to Abraham way back when he was still Abram in Haran. The promise that he would be the father of a nation. Sarai to Sarah. Again, it just sounds like a vowel change. And in some way it is, because at the root of the name, they both mean princess. If you're a Sarah, go away knowing that you are called princess. But Sarai is possessive. It means my princess. And Sarai was probably the pet name given to Sarah by her father. and a name that she would then continue to use when she became her husband's, a woman of intrigue and beauty and mystery that he loved. And so Abraham takes on the name her father had given her. Abraham's also her half-brother. So my Sarah, my princess, is a name he probably used within the family. But Sarah, she suddenly becomes an independent woman. She is princess. She is no longer dictated to by her family. She becomes independent, princess of a new nation, the person who will bear the ancestors of Abraham, the one from whom kings and leaders of the new nation will pour forth. In both of these names, those hearing them would have known the retelling of the story of their nation. And it's what we should continue to hear, the qualities that are asked of those who form God's holy people, qualities that don't speak of easy living, because for those who knew the stories of Abraham and Sarah, they knew that they had journeyed from a far-off land, following the promise of God, that they might live in his presence always. In the Gospel of Mark, the name I think you will most have heard, the one that will have hit you, was what Jesus called Peter, Satan. For those who have read the passage before that bit of the gospel this morning, you will know that that word follows on from Peter calling Jesus the Messiah, the Christ. It follows on from a passage in which the disciple Peter has demonstrated that he suddenly understands who Jesus is. And it sounds as though he's got it until we read this passage. And all of a sudden, he's saying to Jesus that, no, life's not going to be like that. Messiahship is not about what you're saying. This is what it's about. And Jesus turns around and calls him Satan. It doesn't mean he's a demonic force. That's not what the word means. That's not what the name means. It means tempter. He takes that name. For me, it's one of the things that worries and upsets me about names, but it also reminds me of what names do. Names try to encapsulate who we are as human beings and suggest who we are to other people. You might not realise that's what your name is meant to do, but it is meant to do. When you hear my name, you will suddenly think of all the qualities that perhaps go with me. When I hear your name, I might not know you, but I might know somebody off another name, and potentially I could attribute all of their qualities to you. But you might be different. And that's what worries me about names sometimes, that we allow the name to carry an attribution that maybe we don't have. And when you hear Jesus call Peter Satan, there is a moment at which you think, what are you doing to this man? But when you suddenly realise that he's being called, told he's a tempter or a deceiver, we realise that in that moment, Jesus is taken back to the wilderness. He's taken back to his encounter with the tempter, where he was told that all of the world could be his because he was the Son of God. And yet Jesus chose to live the life he was leading. He could have all of the wonder of heaven and none of the hard work. So in the calling of Peter, that name, we hear Jesus' own recognition of what's happening to him. But there's a final name in that gospel reading that I want you to hear. And that's the name Son of Man. It's a title that's found in the Old Testament in the book of Daniel, where it's used to describe the Messiah as someone who comes as a great king. And in the passage we've read today, we hear Jesus take that title and tie it to a different kind of understanding of Messiahship. He ties it to the Isaiah understanding of what it means to be a Messiah, to be someone who will suffer at the hands of the world, that the world might know the love of God. Son of Man, for some people, is thought to have just meant I. And there are many commentators who will try to tell you that whenever Jesus calls himself the Son of Man, he's just saying I am. The Son of Man is I am. It's an Aramaic way of saying I. But there are others who are saying that that's not the case, that he is really trying to take the concept of what it means to be this holy, worthy Messiah found in the book of Daniel and tie it to the new understanding of what it means to be a Messiah, someone who will suffer. We don't really understand what the gospel is saying about suffering when it talks about the cross. Because with post-resurrection eyes and no real understanding of what a crucifixion was like, it just sounds like, I'm just going to put the cross round my neck and I'll be fine. But for those who were to hear that for the very first time, at the time of Jesus, and the followers who would follow for the first 4 or 5 centuries, in which crucifixion was a truly possible action, it was one of the most frightening things they could have heard. Because they knew that to follow Christ to the cross would mean death, would mean suffering. And for the disciples hearing that, for Peter hearing that, that's an abomination. They cannot believe that the Son of God, the Messiah, the one who is chosen to lead his people, will end in the suffering of the cross. I don't want you to go away thinking of the suffering of the cross. Well, I do, because that's what church is about. What I do want you to go away is think about the reclamation of what it means to be a Messiah, of what it means to follow the Messiah. We're not told that the name of Christian or following Christ is an easy life. Instead, what we're told that in bearing the name of Christ, in following his messiahship, we'll be taken to a place that we might want to avoid. We want to avoid the weight of pain and sorrow of our own and of others. But it also asks us to stand with pride alongside those who find themselves at odds with the ways of the world. It's a name that speaks of love when others would walk away in contempt. The American theologian Buchner writes, there are two kinds of churches. The visible, people gather in God's name, you can see who they are, they're going to church. Invisible, people who are God's hands and feet, only God knows who they are. If we are to bear the name of Christ, if we are to follow his messiahship, then those who form the church here in this building and beyond are invited to bear that name and share his discipleship so that we live as those willing to be the hands and feet of God, willing to follow wherever he might call, uncertain of where it will lead. Amen.